What's up, everybody out there in the world? Welcome to The Hub. The Hub, this is a Black-owned site. We are talking, we are enjoying, we're having a lot of great dialogue here. And I am Clay Kane, so I had to come over here on Karen Hunter's creation and really wrap it up and talk about things that are on my mind. Kind of like a light version of The Clay Kane Show on SiriusXM Channel 126. A little lighter, a little more chill, you know. Break from the callers. Just have some time to talk one-on-one. And I have Karen Hunter here.
Hey.
What's up now?
What's
How you feeling?
Up? What's up, my brother?
Listen, there are so many things on my mind in the universe going on. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about with you is this idea of being politically correct, is this idea of correction. So initially, when you think of politically correct, you think of folks being over-policed. And you can't say anything. And everybody's, you know, one word you say and you're trending on Twitter, right? But now in this Trump era, it's really evolved into people saying, I want to be as offensive as hell and I don't want to be corrected. How do you think we went from this space where it was hypersensitive, but now it's gotten to this space where I say, I'm a Republican candidate for governor and I say monkey up to the Black candidate.
Let's not monkey this up,
right? Or calling him articulate. Like, how do we get to this space where it was hypersensitive and now it's like, I should be able to be as racist and as crazy as hell and no one should challenge me?
I want to say easily Trump, but Trump is a symptom, right? So I kind of consider myself not offensive, but people get offended by me a lot. My whole life. I got kicked out of Brownies at the age of 5 or 6. How old was I? I got kicked out of Brownies for saying something. I got kicked out of Upward Bound. I got kicked out of Upward Bound for telling a kid, this girl, that her brains was in her ass or something. I had heard it on a TV show, and I said, that's a perfect thing to say to somebody that's acting stupid.
Yes.
So they kicked me out because I think she was mentally challenged, but I didn't factor that in. Anyway, so I've stepped on my tongue a lot as a person because I tend to have very little filter. And I've always kind of operated from this standpoint that out of the overflow of the heart. So that's a scripture, right? Mm-hmm. So like my heart, I feel is right. Like I'm not here to be to tear people down. It just feels that way. Mm-hmm. So if you tell me I've offended you, I'm good with correcting the behavior.
Exactly.
So like the word retarded.
Yes.
Okay, so that has turned into a thing, right? Because
when I was younger, it wasn't a thing.
No, everything was retarded.
Yeah.
And you were retarded, even if you weren't retarded. And we kind of understood that we're not talking about retarded people.
Yeah.
And this is why I think like political correctness kind of goes awry, because there are things colloquially that we use that we're not targeting a group.
Yeah.
It's just, but I get it. So I stopped using retarded, because if people who are raising special needs kids or whatever, they feel very offended by that, why pile on? We're brilliant enough to come up with other insults.
Exactly.
May not, but then that goes back to the whole insult mentality, right? I grew up playing the dozens. So in my household, my mother and father and I and my, you know, like we played the dozens.
Mm-hmm.
I got my father grew up in Newark. He was very dark skinned. And he had like 7 brothers and sisters. They all kind of looked alike. And he and his brother, who's like 11 months younger than he was, they were called the Goldust Twins. Now, if you Google search the Goldust Twins, you know, back in the 50s and 40s, they had these very offensive commercials and, you know, ads with Black people eating watermelon, looking like monkeys, you know, that very same thing. And so he grew up like that. So I found a picture of 2 monkeys and I put it in a frame and we put it up on the piano one Christmas and it was like, this is your baby picture. Now we internally,
and I'm laughing.
Exactly. Here's your baby pictures. And my father would show it to people, come on, yeah, that's my brother and I babies, you know. And it was like funny inside the household. Like but if you think about it, the pathology of that, it's really sick. So I'm like, so I have no bar or, you know, measure of what's acceptable if that's the way I grew up. You understand? But as an adult, a sentient being, a loving being, I have to, if I'm challenged on those things, and I have to make the adjustment because I can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what you're saying, it strikes home, because I think people have always had these shreds of inhumanity. Having a leader of the free world exhibited on a regular basis makes people feel more comfortable about their, because it to change is a little bit, it takes
some work. It's uncomfortable. Yeah.
And people don't like to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can remember when I moved to New York, I had a really big culture shock. I'm a Philly boy. I lived in Washington State for a long time. I grew up in a strictly all-white or all-black environment. So when I moved to New York, I remember, believe it or not, I was using the word Oriental. And I just didn't know.
Right.
I mean, this is in 1998.
But when did it change?
I don't know when it changed.
Who determined it was that Oriental was offensive and Asian now is the new thing that we use when
I literally didn't know.
Where's the handbook?
Right, exactly. I was confused. I was like, and I had this Asian girl, I don't know what her nationality was. She cussed me out on the job, every way, shape. I mean, I had some horrible customer service job, and I took it. Oriental is a Hollywood term. That's not who we're not. That's the Orient. What does that mean? I said, oh, I'm sorry. I really didn't know. I didn't know. And she put me in my place. And that happened. My first year or two in New York, it happened all the time. It was with Latin folks. I wasn't raised around Latin folks. You know, I was calling everybody Spanish. I was making a lot of mistakes, but I took it because I didn't. When I would meet trans folks, I would say all the wrong things and I would be corrected. And, you know, I took it because I want to be a good person. I want to be a smart person. I want to know how to talk to people. But one thing that I've noticed in this culture that we're in is that, you know, if you correct somebody, it's like you're calling them a racist. Or if you correct somebody, you're calling them a homophobe.
Mm-hmm.
And if we, or you're calling them whatever, if we can't get in a space where a correction isn't offensive, then where are we going to go?
But you know what? I love playing the dozens.
Yeah,
there's
a part
of it. I love playing the dozens, using it. And like in my family, it takes me back to it's weird, right?
Yeah,
it takes me back
to
a very warm place.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to give that up.
Yeah.
But again, if I'm going to be a human being,
which
I am,
then
I'm going to just have to like give up the things that remind me of a time in my life that was, you know, wonderful. Even though that's dysfunctional as hell, if I have to think about it.
Yeah.
And then really process it intellectually. Like, that was dysfunction. That wasn't healthy to call my father a monkey and, you know, for him to call me names and my mother and my brother, you know, to have that as our family dynamic probably wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
And I want to be healthy and I want to love people. And so I have to make that transition. So I don't think, as much as people don't want to be told what to do, they also don't want to change behavior because they're connected to it. And it somehow is sort of like you telling somebody, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. And you're like, why don't you change your party affiliation? And they want to have a fight because they're so connected. It's almost like their being. You're telling them to change who they are. And ostensibly you are.
Right, right.
But don't we want to be better people is the question. And to your point, you know, from the words retarded to using the N-word to monkey and all those other things, in intraculturally, outside of the culture, Oriental, I ran into that one, as well as I don't want to be gypped.
Right. That one. That was one for me, too. I never heard that before.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was offensive, rather.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Don't
gyp me. That's
right.
Offensive. Or don't be an Indian giver.
Right, that
That's
one, too.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
But we say these things
all
in our society.
Yeah.
And if you think about the seed, and then it becomes this kind of, you know, sociology discussion about white supremacy and how it has so ingrained itself into our culture that even the words that we use. And so as a white person in America, you're tired of this. You're tired of always.
Like everybody's telling me what.
And especially if you're a white man.
Right.
Because you're supposed to be at the top of the food chain telling people what to do, not the other way around.
Exactly.
So now I got my wife telling me women can't. I can't touch women's titties. And I can't say these things to these N-words.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Trump.
Right,
you know?
Right. Make it great again.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really what we're up against. And I don't know what we do about that other than model and mirror the best. So I accept the reproof and the rebuke and the correction because that's what adults do when you're wrong.
Yeah.
And if we have children listening and watching us, children follow what we do, not what we say. And it's important for us to model the behavior that we want to see in the world. So I will always be corrected. You can correct me anytime.
That's
with respect. But I'm all for saying I'm wrong. I'm all for saying that was wrong. Let's fix that. Because I want to be right.
Let me say this. I'm just thinking this out now, so it may come out weird. As far as playing the dozens and cracking on each other. So I have a rule, and this might be a little solution out there. One of the rules that I do is I never punch down, right? So here's what I mean. One of my friends, he's really fit, really muscular, really whatever. And he makes a lot of fat jokes when he's cracking on each other, when they're in a quote-unquote read session. Right. And I told him, I said, you can't do that
right.
because you're skinny as hell.
Right. And you're in good shape.
And you're in good
shape.
It's like
a beautiful person saying somebody's ugly.
Exactly.
Yeah, no,
we
I
all
agree.
Know, you can't crack. You got to be smarter than that.
Right.
If you want to play the dove, if you want to crack, if you want to throw shade, you got to be smarter than that, right? And so, and because skinnier people are treated better. They're considered more attractive. So even when it comes to the whole light skin, dark skin thing, because lighter skin folks are treated better, if I'm in a shade, a plain, I'm not going to make a dark skin joke. I'm not even going to think to go there because I know how I'm treated. So it's like, that's a way to think about it. If we could still, I think playing the dozens and throwing shade, it's helped me to be on the radio.
It's helped me, right?
Fun,
though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good feeling.
It, man.
But I'm not going to go to a space where, like I told him, don't make fun of his weight.
Right.
Make fun of his face. Something
right,
else.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to.
I'm going to tell you, and maybe we're similar like that. The first thing I do when I see somebody is I look for the weaknesses that will allow me to destroy them.
Right.
I mean, So I come from a particular place, right?
Yeah.
And being both, there's no excuse for it. It's just one of my defense mechanisms.
Right.
I'm going to come in the room. I'm looking up and down.
Right.
So if you ever get out of line, I got you.
I got you, yeah.
And so I'm ready for anybody verbally.
Right.
But what has happened to me over the years is that it's almost like a vulgar display because I've been doing this since I was a child. I am masterful at tearing somebody up verbally.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't do it because I know I can.
Right.
So there's another layer of strength and power that comes in not doing something that you can do.
Yes.
You know, just because I can destroy you verbally and you come for me and I don't do it, knowing that I can put you into tears
right.
with several words.
Right.
That makes me a stronger, bigger person. And because I've been practicing that over the last 3 or 4
restraint.
Years.
Restraint.
Since being on the radio, I'm going to tell you, because them streets.
Yeah,
Clay Kane.
Yes.
And in them streets, it's a brutal place.
It is.
You can get some.
And you got to survive.
On the radio, my rule of thumb is I never call somebody necessarily out of their name. Except for Donald Trump, I started with the Orange Cheeto, and I started, playing the Oompa Loompa music when he was running for office. Because that made me, because he looked like the head of the Oompa Loompas, a big, giant version of it. And, I'll call him Comancho, and I'll call him. But listeners, Outside of the word troll, which is an actual designation of a thing that you're doing, I don't say, call people out of their names.
You don't call people stupid.
No, I won't do that.
Yeah,
because that is punching down. Because
yeah.
now I have this microphone. And I have to bear the responsibility of this microphone. But also in practicing not doing that, it has made me feel even more empowered.
Yes.
Because I know within a couple of phrases, you're done.
Right.
Because I've already examined who you are and what you're about.
Right.
Physically, especially. Woo!
Right, you have it.
And I'm like, because I was a fat kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to play defense.
Yeah.
And I always learned a good defense. If I punch you so hard in the face verbally, you're not thinking about talking about my weight.
TKO.
Boom,
total
from
knockout.
The door. So I usually came in the door with it. Bop, 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 bop.
Yeah, I think it's important to have those boundaries. My mother always told me, she said, if you want to insult a woman, I don't care how skinny she is, just say she's fat. So that I don't care if she's bone skinny.
It will mess with her.
That will destroy her for the rest of the day. And so she said, therefore, you never insult a woman's weight. I don't care how angry you get. I don't care if it's your cousin. You never go there. Never. And I've always been that way. Like, we gotta have some boundaries. But unfortunately, with someone like, what's his name? DeSantis? I think I'm trying to block it out of my brain.
Yeah, from Florida.
I think with someone like him or someone like Trump or folks on Fox News, for me, Karen, I'm getting in a space where I just can't fight the fight with you. Like, I have to just give up and, like you say, let you be shamed and hopefully you'll learn. Because it's exhausting. Like,
but I wonder what these people tell their children, right?
Right.
So, like, you're all of these people that you're mentioning, they're raising families. I saw DeSantis with his kid who I had jokes about, by the way. So that's I went immediately. I was like, I won't say it. See? So I had to just edit myself.
Restraint.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you off mic, though, but I had jokes.
Yes.
But I'm like, you're raising children.
Yeah.
And you're saying these things, and for people who are like, I didn't notice this was a phrase. We all know that watermelon, fried chicken.
And you're in the South.
From the Birth of a Nation, yes. D.W. Griffith. This is the depiction of black people. It was in, like, my father growing up, you know, being called one of the Gold Dust twins.
Yeah.
You know, the insults have always been around those things. Barack Obama was called a monkey.
Yeah, they went to his rally with a
noose.
In a foreign
country.
Yeah.
I think Japan or something had a billboard with him and his wife with monkey faces.
Exactly.
This is universal.
Yeah.
But what you were saying on the air, because I was listening to that particular show, if you're corrected, then you didn't mean to insult somebody.
Then you shouldn't be offended.
Apologize.
Exactly.
I didn't know. Just like you didn't know about Oriental,
yeah.
And I didn't know about being gypped, and
right.
I didn't know about Indian Giver until it was brought to my attention, and you're like, okay, I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
Unless that is your
That's
goal.
Who you are.
Unless you're dog whistling or bullhorning a group of people that you want them to say, oh, that guy's on our team.
Right.
He's that guy that we can follow that's going to make
and
me feel like a man.
Him.
But the larger question, why does that make you feel like a man?
Right.
Why does that empower you to insult people, to denigrate people?
You know, one of the things that you brought up, I think it's so funny, I think it's so true, is penis. And this idea.
I didn't bring it up in this particular discussion.
Yeah, but I think it connects, though.
So
I really do. I really do. I think that, I mean, you brought it up brilliantly. I do think that DeSantis seeing this big, handsome black dude, you know, win that nomination, knock out that, what's her name, Gwen Graham,
mm-hmm.
and this big black, I really think you hit something. And basically you were saying that they're afraid of this penis because they have a small penis. And let me tell you something. If you want to insult a man, I don't care how big his dick is, you say he has a small penis, right? And I just think that there's something to that because we really see it from a lot of white men.
And that's a stereotype.
I think it is.
Yeah.
No, there's plenty of white men that have.
There are plenty of white men that have large penises,
right.
And you kind of know who they are. Because it's sort of like what I'm saying. You know, when you have the goods, you don't have
you're not
to.
By
you
it.
Don't have to. You're like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. You good. I'm good too.
Right.
Yeah, you put it down. I put it down too.
Right.
We could, you know, but I think this is what we are right now. We have a nation of mediocrity, a nation of people who don't read, who don't want to read, who are lazy. A nation.
Yes.
And if this is you, and you're mad.
Kanye West don't read.
Right.
Yeah.
if you're upset hearing this right now, you got to fix yourself.
Exactly.
Because I'm talking to you.
Exactly.
And in that environment, you can't compete.
Right.
So instead of working to compete with people, because it's going to be hard to compete with Andrew Gillum, who's willing to go out and knock on every single door in Florida if he has to.
Right.
That's hard to compete with.
It is.
Right? It's hard to compete with a person that is charismatically, facially better suited for
the
camera than you
glow.
Are.
Yeah.
Right. You know, whose teeth sparkle with bling when
he
opens his mouth, in the words, in the authenticity, in the humanity. If you're not willing to, you can't match that and you don't have another platform.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to run on.
Exactly.
Because everything that he's talking about, the vast majority of people are like, yeah, I want safer schools. I need to not be shot because somebody got their feelings hurt. Let's not stand your ground anymore. Let's bring more jobs in. Let's look at the, you know, healthcare for everybody, Medicaid, extending it. You can't compete because you don't have a platform.
Right.
And this is when you know. So here's my thing, Clay. Like, how do we shame, like, really make it a public shame for you not to be prepared to compete?
Mm-hmm.
This is America.
Yeah.
We're the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
We show up to the Olympics and we snatch people's gold chains off their necks.
Yeah. How do we get back to striving for excellence?
That's the question.
That's such a great point, Karen. That goes with everything. And I'm not going to name any names. I probably will. But even when I look at our music.
Oh, my God.
Remember back in the day when you would look at the Grammys and you would wait for the black artists to come on because they'd be singing live because they would hit all those notes? Remember that?
Yes.
And now
Motown 25.
Oh, my God. At the Apollo, that was insane.
Motown 25.
Now, and with all due respect, there's some, and I like Beyonce a lot. But folks, I've heard folks say Beyonce is the Aretha of our generation. And I like Beyonce a lot.
She is not.
But I'm like, is this where we are?
Right.
Like, and I'm not saying Beyonce is mediocre. I'm just saying
you ain't got to be afraid of the Beehive. Because if they're mad, then they're mediocre too.
And
I'm not saying Beyonce is, she's one of the best performers.
And Beyonce wouldn't say she's Aretha. Beyonce
she's
wouldn't
not,
say that.
Because
but,
she's
but,
not.
But people say that. And I'm like, is our music and our art this mediocre? Really? Is that
yes.
where we are? Like,
yes.
How do we get back to And I'm not about respectability. I'm just saying, like, how do we get back to some kind of striving for excellence? Like, Michael Jackson was excellent. Rihanna has more number one hits than Michael Jackson.
Are you
like
kidding me?
Yes, she does.
I want to kick you in your knee right now.
I like
Rihanna.
Are you
serious?
She's cool. More number one hits than MJ.
Wait, Cardi B.
Cardi B.
All right. So let's say this.
You brought up Nicki Minaj being a 35, on your show a couple months ago, mm-hmm. being a 35-year-old woman, still talk about my pussy, my this, my that. How do we, like, even just starting with blackness,
right.
like, you don't got to be prim, proper, da-da-da, but how do we go, even at least in your field,
right.
to be excellent? Be excellent in hip-hop.
Okay, so there are no more Berry Gordy's, there are no more Quincy Joneses, you know, there are no more people. I mean, even with Berry, there was a Philadelphia sound. You
yes,
come from Philly.
Kenny. Oh,
right?
my gosh,
Kenny
yeah.
Gamble.
Yes,
and all.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm saying there were people who were, and they were peers, and they worked together, and even if they were rivals, there was, like, kind of, competition breeds excellence, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes,
so if everybody's there, yeah. in their lab, oh, I got this artist coming out. Oh, really? I was with Bell Biv DeVoe and Bobby. They're Ronnie, but they're on tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were saying when they heard Bobby's, because, you know, Teddy Riley, after he got kicked out of the group, Bobby, and they heard the first, you know, My Prerogative. And they were like, so Bell Biv DeVoe, who were, they were coming out, they were like, we got to go back into the lab.
Competition.
Not like, ooh, bump Bobby, he sucks. Let's trash that. Let's stomp on
right.
it. Nah, we gotta step it up.
Right.
Poison. So Ron was
epic
like,
hit.
we gotta drop Poison.
Yeah.
And then we gotta, you know. But that's what we don't have right now.
Yeah.
And there's a fear. Because I think internally, if people are being honest with themselves, to be able to compete requires training.
Yeah.
Right? As an athlete or even as a writer.
Yeah.
Right? Because we do both,
yes.
right? You have to work to get to a place to be able to compete, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't just, you just don't come out and it's like, I didn't come out the womb writing
yeah.
very well.
Yeah.
I had to put my 10,000 hours in. You don't become Jordan, and Jordan may be physically gifted and LeBron's physically gifted, but the work that they put in, the Steph Curry's, what they put into
their
homework.
Their craft, yeah, yeah.
They don't just show up. It's why Allen Iverson won't ever be.
Mm-hmm. And I love
in the
Philly,
annals, and I love Allen Iverson.
But you're right.
But he didn't put it in,
yeah.
and he could have.
Yeah,
been one of the greatest top five of all time.
Dennis
but he
Rodman,
will not be one
thing.
Of the top five.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman's the same thing. He wanted to be a star. He wanted to be a star. No, that's some real. That connects with every. That's real as far as being so mediocre with our language, with our art, with who we are, with how we operate, especially with black folks. Like, I wish we could strive to a space where we're just excellent at everything. But mediocre sells. Mediocre is profitable.
It only sells because most of us are comfortable in our mediocrity. And
right.
If somebody mediocre can win, then that means I can too. And here's the thing. None of us will ever be Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
None of us will ever be Michael Jordan
right.
or LeBron. And that just has to be okay. And when we talk about, when I'm talking about excellence, I mean excellence in your own.
In your lane.
In your own space.
And knowing your lane.
Right. In your own space. I will never be. I'll never be Toni Morrison. Let me just mm-hmm. put that out there.
Neither will I.
Okay.
And I ain't going to be James Baldwin.
And I'm okay with
yeah.
that because I'm going to create my own space because we're all put here to do something. But the problem is everybody wants to be that thing.
Right.
So if I can look at a Kardashian, sure, I can go get plastic surgery and I can do that. I can be Kylie Jenner.
Right.
If I'm a young girl right now, I got that.
Right.
You know,
right.
this is what this requires, a little lip filler, especially if I'm a white girl.
Yeah.
You don't have to do too much of anything.
Exactly.
But the problem is that's, you know, no one wants to work to get there. And then there's nobody training anybody anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so there's nobody doing the Berry Gordy. You're going to get in this lab and you're not going to step foot on a stage until you are trained. We're going to get your teeth fixed, Diana.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to
mm-hmm.
give you some etiquette training because you're from Detroit and the projects and you don't know how to hold a fork. We're gonna teach you how to walk with grace. To this day, Diana Ross is one of the most graceful,
absolutely.
Amazing performers. But she came from the projects in Detroit.
Yeah, Brewster Projects, correct? Yeah, yeah.
But he crafted. He did the Pygmalion thing.
Yeah.
Because he saw something in her. And they were mad that she was out front, but she could carry that. And he saw something in her. But he worked on that.
Yeah. And it wasn't a one. It wasn't one hit.
No,
they were called the no hit Supremes, right? You give people space, time to grow. Yeah, it's really it's a fascinating space where we are in our culture, and which is why when somebody great comes along, people lose their mind. They're like, oh my God. Like Adele, I think Adele's great.
Yeah.
But is she Barbara Streisand? No, is she Celine Dion?
She's not.
No. But it's like, oh my God. She,
and she's not Aretha Patty.
She's not Aretha.
She's not.
Definitely
she's,
not a
no.
soul. But it's like, oh my God. Oh my, it's so amazing. It's so amazing because we, now, if this was 1979, Adele wouldn't be considered that great. They would say she's no
Tina
Barbara
Marie.
Tina, she's no Tina Marie, right? Right? But this is where we are in our culture, right. and it's strange to me, and I don't know where we're going to go.
Well, I think the pendulum swings, and here's the good news, Clay Kane.
Yes.
Here's the good news.
Yes.
With all of this acrimony and toxic behavior and the leadership that we have, there becomes a tipping point.
Yes.
You know, Gladwell talks about that too. I love his book Outliers, and I love Tipping Point because he has a way of examining culture. There comes a point where people's appetite for this goes away. And I always go back to Oprah Winfrey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Oprah was number one. She was the top of the food chain. And then there was this wave of like Maurice Povich and Jerry Springer.
Ratchet.
Right.
Before the
big
term
butts
was...
Yeah. And big butt women and puny men. And they were
Ricky
like...
Ricky Lake, yeah.
Yeah, these headline kind of like fight, people throwing chairs and you are not the father.
And they were beating her in the ratings.
They were beating her in the ratings. And she had a choice to make. She could have done more of those race baiting things like
yeah.
the Georgia thing and whatever, because that was good for ratings.
Yeah.
She made a decision to do the opposite, to feed people's souls. And she took a hit in the ratings. And she didn't stop, though. She didn't capitulate, even though her ratings dipped. She kept going, and the world caught up with her.
Last one standing.
So I feel like, you know, it's those of us who have platforms and microphones and the ability to have wisdom to you know, and it's weird, you know, the position I'm in because I've been there from the beginning. Mm. You know, I've been in this game since the 80s, you know, and the desire.
You are moisturized
to,
well. It must be those beats, those
thank
super
you.
Beats.
late 80s, 89, I got to the Daily News. But you recognize that, you know, the world is about, you know, it's almost like a roller coaster. We have
yeah.
dips in hills and valleys, and if you stay true to your thing and not sell out, because there are a lot of people, black people right now in media, just grabbing jobs and opportunities, and you know, even coming to Sirius XM, is what I saw on you when you came on my show, is that you've been in this grind for a minute, kind of flying under the radar. Nobody's been checking for you,
kinda,
but you've been
I
consistent.
Wasn't. I was
yeah.
under the radar.
No, but you've been consistent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You followed me at RL. I was at RL. You came afterwards, and I've been watching you since then because I wanted to see who's this guy at RL because, you know, I was salty. And I was like, oh, all right, he's all right. And then when you came through, I was like, just work. And eventually, you just be patient.
Yeah.
And the world to catch up with you.
Yeah.
So even all these ratchet people with their horrible insides, if we just keep shaming them,
yeah.
showing goodness, showing how it's done, we're going to slip and make mistakes every now and then. I know I'm going to offend somebody. I'm going to step on a toe. But as I say, people, if I step on your toe, I say to people, say ouch.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people don't know.
Yeah.
Now, if I grind in,
yeah.
then you know I meant to step on your toe.
Exactly.
But this guy, DeSantis, grinded in.
Exactly.
Trump grinds in.
Right.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Right.
So it's just it. I won't do it again. I'm going to look out for your toe next time. And if we just keep praising those people and showing what goodness looks like, I think the pendulum's going to swing. Because this next generation, these kids out here, these I don't know what the generation is, the Parkland kids. And
yeah. Generation Z or something.
Good kids in their 18, 19, 20-year-old kids are not like these adults.
Right.
And so that's my hope. I teach them. So I'm looking, and they have a different mentality. And I feel hopeful, even though their parents suck.
Well, I think that's a good takeaway. I think we just gave folks some good takeaway. One, when it comes to language and being offended, no one expects you to know everything. But folks do expect you to be compassionate and to hear when someone says that's offensive. Because that's being a human being. Like, not everybody gets the How to Be a Human manual. And that's one part of the How to Be a Human manual that you're picking up right now, that when someone tells you, this bothers me, and you're not of that community, of that culture, just receive it. Just receive it. I think the other one is, no matter what you're doing in your craft, you got to stay in your lane and be patient and hone your craft. I think that's really, I think that's some good takeaways for this podcast on the Hub. I love it. I love it. Karen Hunzer, thank you for being here. Thank you for being supportive.
Keep coming back.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we got to make this a regular thing. Thank you. I love it. I appreciate it. And listen, this is Clay Kane on the Hub. Check me out on Sirius. Check me out on social media. Clay Kane, C-L-A-Y-C-A-N-E. And of course, Karen Hunzer. Karen Hunzer, you know how it's just like it spells out. Check it out. We're here. We love y'all. Appreciate it. I'll see y'all soon.